Thank you. And thanks to the organizers for inviting me. I've been here now. This is the third time. I guess the third time is a charm in the past month giving talks. By popular request, I'm going to be talking about some preliminary work. This is mainly for Edo, so the rest of you could go, you know, and he could just listen to it. So it's about, if you have some relational observations, it could be a network or it could just be a table of objects and features, how do you find group structure in there? And this is joint work with Steve Koutsouralakis, who used to be at Livermore and now is an assistant professor at Cornell. From where I stand, relational observations are everywhere. They can be binary, or they can have an integer value on them, or a real value. They could be of different types, where I email you or I call you, and they can have their own attributes. And the same thing with the objects that these links connect. So they could be of different types. So for example, here, this woman works at this facility, and they're often time evolving, which time either appears on the link or on the node. And so some of the problems or interests is that, you know, find the groups or the clusters or the communities of objects for each of the types, or find common entities between the objects of each type. And I'll talk to you about what the difference between entities and groups are. The key here, as opposed to everything that Andrew talked about yesterday, is that we do not have content, right? I work at a national lab, privacy issues, I don't want to go to jail, I have no content, right? So really what I have is just this network structure. I may have some shallow attribute information, but that's as far as it goes, right? I do not have email content to look at. And neither do our sponsors. So what is a group structure? Like, how can you represent a group structure? So this is the karate club that's been around since 1977, in which the nodes are people. The relationship here is whether somebody likes another person. There was a fight between number one, who is the instructor, and number 34, which is the administrator, and the network basically partitioned in some sense. And so one way of going about it, and if you were here last Monday, I spoke about three different approaches or general classes of approaches that are out there. One of them is a probabilistic approach. And if you decide to go with a probabilistic approach, what you'll have is you'll have a prior on your groups or identities, and then given those priors, you want to say what's the likelihood of the data, which is the relationships, and then you want to find the posterior. And if you do the inference, you may come up with a matrix like this, which gives you the average posterior of two nodes belonging to the same group. And as you can imagine, red means one and navy means zero. The other way would be to basically, given a node, say what's the probability of that node belonging to a particular group. And so what I'm showing here is based on the maximum likelihood configuration. This is these results are based on the model that I will describe shortly. So why do we want to find hidden structure? Is because it can allow us, let's say, to predict links or to just understand the communication structure, also to be able to group the objects in predictable ways. So here's, again, the last figure that I showed you. So here's, the karate club, and here is the probability of a particular node belonging either to group one or group two. And one of the good things about probabilistic approaches is that it gives you a probability of belonging to the different groups. So even though two seems really close to one, and depending on how you visualize it, two actually has exhibits 20% of the linkage of belonging to group to the administrative group. So maybe somebody could talk to him and bring him over to the administrator side. And there are other ones here as well that you could see. So what we wanted to do in particular was we wanted to look at non-parametric Bayesian approaches. And the reason we picked non-parametric is that you do not have to specify the number k for, you know, how many groups you're going to be able to find, right? But by definition, the way that non-parametric works is that it grows as your data grows. And so given an adjacency matrix, and I will describe how these things could also be like a real value, that it's 0 or 1, we want to find the latent or hidden groups. So back in 2006, in AAAI, there was a really nice flexible model that came out of Josh Tannenbaum's lab at MIT called Infinite Relational Models. And this is the generative model. So Z is the groups, which is basically the CRP is a prior. The ITA matrix is a parameter matrix. And basically it says what's the probability of a person in group A having a link to a person in group B, and that's beta. And then you say that the likelihood of observing a link between you and me is solely dependent on the partition or the group for that node and this ITA matrix. So we really liked this model. We felt like it was very flexible. Like to us, it was the equivalent of LDA, dare I say. So, and it could be easily augmented. So as opposed to using the Bernoulli, you could use exponential or gamma if you have a real value. And also if you have some attribute observation on the nodes, you can also encode that in the likelihood as I show here. So the advantages of IRM, as I was saying, you know, we really liked it, is that first of all, it doesn't have a lot of hyperparameters. It has the beta, which is for the beta distribution, and the hyperparameter for the Chinese restaurant process. It can be applied to multiple node types and relationships. It has all the advantages of a probabilistic Bayesian formulation. It's non-parametric, and they showed that they have been able to successfully use it. The one thing that it does not capture is this idea of multiple personalities, right? Not all of my links are because I'm exhibiting one personality, right? Some of my links are because I'm a wife, some of them are because I'm a computer scientist, and so on and so forth. So what we wanted to do was to see whether we can extend it to be able to capture this. And basically what I'm going to show you next is two different models. And the only thing we change really is a prior, right? If you're Bayesian, if you pick a good prior, you're good to go, right? So we wanted to change the prior. I'm glad I'm not giving this talk in the Wisconsin Stats Department. So what do I mean by multiple personalities, right? It's fairly clear to people is that, you know, I have an identity, and my identity is a mixture of different components. If I have a network, let's say, of communications, it could be emails, phone calls, or whatever, you know, I can find several groups, you know, coworkers, acquaintances, friends, family, right? And when I find that, what I want to do is, given those groups, I want to find a probability distribution for myself, given my link information, to be able to vary to find the amounts that I belong to these different groups. So that's basically what we wanted to do, and we changed the name from groups to identities to just make that clear. And this is basically what I just said. So each object, again, as I was saying, can exhibit multiple identities, right? I'm an object in this social network between people, communications, and I can exhibit the identity of being a coworker to somebody, being friend of somebody, and so on and so forth. And so what we decided to do was to change the prior from the Chinese restaurant process to the Chinese franchise process. Why? Because what I want to do is, given the social network, I want to find the groups, and then given the groups, I want to find the membership degree. For those of you who are not familiar with the Chinese restaurant franchise, it came out of Jordan's group. And basically, you have a fix set of restaurants. You first pick the restaurant, then the table, and then the dish. I won't go through it. You can read the JASA paper. But still, the likelihood only depends on the group memberships that you have, right? So the probability that I have a link to you, it depends on my group membership, and it depends on your group membership, or my identity and your identity. So this is the generative model for basically taking the IRM and taking out the prior, which was the CRP, and replacing the CRF. It obviously has more parameters to deal with. In particular, what we do is, for every node, right, for each of its links, it could belong to a different group, right? So as opposed to IRMs, where you take the node and you take all of its links, and based on observing all of its links, it will place it into one group, we don't do that. We say, well, because of this link, I could belong to that group. Because of this link, I could belong to that group. And so in some sense, we take the extreme, the other extreme. So, and there is a happy medium that we haven't tapped into. And the inference is just the same as IRMs. Again, the likelihood. And so the advantages of this model, and again, it's a very simple extension of IRM, right? I'm not claiming anything big here, is that we can capture these mixed memberships. And every other good thing about IRMs does follow. Obviously, we have more parameters to do inference over, and so it is slower, and we are working with Mike Jordan to make that faster. So this is the monk data set that Edo was going to talk about later today. And basically, there were like 17 monks. This data set has been around for a very long time. There was a rift, and over time, people started falling off or leaving the monastery, basically. And so, again, this is very similar to the Karate Club matrix that I showed you, which just says, you know, what's the probability of this young Turk being in the same group as this waverer? So that kind of a thing. And you know, and it's interesting for people to see, you know, what's the probability of group membership of different people. So this is where I'm going to show you the differences between, specifically between IMM and IRM. This is a very small data set. As you can see, I can show it to you here. It's the animal data set, the animal feature data set. And one of the good things about this, again, is that it's not a network, right? And it's, you know, it's a bipartite graph, but, you know, you have objects and you have features. And so there are two domains, so the domain of animals and the domain of their features. And clearly there are two groups, the birds and the four-legged animals. But actually some of the features are kind of funky. Like, I don't know why cows don't run. So here the results of what the IMM gives. And what is interesting is that IMM, for example, does not put dog all the way in the four-legged mammals, because if you look at the feature right there, it says that dogs cannot hunt, right? And like, for example, it says that cats don't run, or eagle hunts but is not small, right? So it gives you a proportion based on the features, which can be very helpful and useful. So here's the difference between IRM and our IMMM. The I fell off. And so this is the average posterior pairwise probability of cow and one of these animals belonging to the same group. And one of the reasons, so IRM basically gives probability of zero of cow belonging to in a group with any of these, and you may think, well, that's right. But if you, again, go back and look at the observations, the data, you see that cow has some distinct similarities with birds that it doesn't share with the four-legged mammals. And so, for example, it doesn't hunt, it doesn't have a mane, and it does not run. So because of what the data tells us, we can give you however small, but these probabilities, which our sponsors have found useful. So the other thing If you have seen me talk in the last couple of weeks, especially I've been harping on validation, and in particular with these kinds of probabilistic models, what you could do is you take a link out and then you train your model and then you try to see if you can predict that link, or you take a bunch of links out. And so what we did was we used this full sample log score, which you take one link out at a time. And so a higher score denotes a more accurate model. And we tested this on the animal feature data set, on the Karate Club, on the US political books that was mentioned before. This is where the network is, the nodes are books and the links are co-purchasing. And this was generated back in 2004. And then the reality mining data set, which is a very interesting data set. If you want to talk to me, come later, in which the nodes are people here, and the links are whether people were close enough to each other for their Bluetooth devices to meet. And we performed slightly, so the extension, this is just changing the prior, right? Nothing new, really. Being a good Bayesian, finding a better prior. We do a little bit better than IRM with respect to the full sample log score. So the other thing that we wanted to do is, this is cool, let's change the prior again and see what else comes up, right? And this is where, you know, I would appreciate your input, since we don't have a validation technique, and I'm just presenting this for Edo because I don't have a validation technique. So what we want to do is we want to learn a hierarchy, right? And so basically what we want to do, though, this was inspired by the hierarchical topic models, in which if you have ever seen that kind of a hierarchy, at the very top, for example, the group has A, B, and all these common words, right? And as you go down this hierarchical topic model, the groups become more specific or idiosyncratic, right? Like you have the words associated with machine learning, or you have the words associated with cognitive science. So that's what we wanted to do. So if, for example, this is a synthetic data set in which you have basically four sets of objects, and these are the identities that you know they belong to and the proportion, You want a tree like this, because identity one is something that's common among all the objects. Identity two is only common among sets two through four, and identity three and four are very, very idiosyncratic. And I will show examples of this with respect to political books that will make it more clear. So basically what we did then was we took out the Chinese restaurant franchise prior, and we put in the hierarchical Chinese restaurant process. And the thing here is that the user will have to give us the number of levels in the tree. And basically the number of levels in the tree will say how detailed of a view of these groups that you find does the user want. So here's an illustrative example. Again, you have the same synthetic data set that you know the ground truth for. And this is the hierarchy that you want to find, in which on the root, right, set one is most exhibited. You still have set two, set three, and set four, but really set one, the people belonging to set one reside up there. At level two, or level one, because that was zero, being a good computer scientist, you have set two that's exhibited the most. And then at level two, you have one. It branches off. You have one set of groups that exhibit the properties of set three, and another one that exhibits properties of set four. So this is the generative model that we came up from. Again, it's nothing new, right? We just took the IRM, we thought it was really cool, and we changed the prior, right? And so here we gave it a hierarchical Chinese restaurant process. Again, this prior came out of Mike Jordan's talk, in which the first one is where you generate the tree, right? So for this one, for node I, which path does it belong to in this tree of level L? And then you do the branch selection based on the Dirichlet. Then you have a fixed set of levels. Then you do your level selection based on the discrete uniform. And then you do your identity assignments as previously. You have your parameter matrix and your likelihood. And again, your likelihood only depends on the parameter matrix and the groups that people belong in. And this is, again, we wanted this to be hierarchical mixed membership. So this is identity of node I given its mth link. And so the inference, what we do is we do component-wise Gibbs, in which we assume that the level that a node will fall into is independent from the branch that it picks. We take liberty with that. And so we do Gibbs separately on each one. Again, we haven't done anything special with the inference. It's just changing the priors, seeing what the hell we get, right? So, yes?
I'm trying to understand. So these latent variables correspond to the groups that you are discovering. And I can think about this like hierarchical LDA, in which observed data is assigned to some node in the hierarchy, which may be at a higher level. So you can say,
actually,
we belong to the same group at this higher level, abstract level, but not this lower level.
Given a branch,
yeah,
a node can belong to anywhere in that branch.
Right.
It's just that where we place it is where it has the highest probability of belonging.
Okay. But belonging to a higher level corresponds to...
Belonging to the higher level corresponds to you having the kind of relational... the link structure that is very common among all the nodes available. So, in fact, this example clarifies it, in which at the very top you have groups that are very heterogeneous. You know, you have a lot of the given that the neutral books are few, you have a lot of the neutral books, and then as you go down, it becomes more idiosyncratic. So the books that belong to Al Franken or Rush Limbaugh are in the bottom, and in that sense, this corresponds to the hierarchical topic model, because you have A, B, and all of those on the top, and then you have the machine learning words in one group and the Coxsackie words in another group.
Just
yeah.
Make a comment, and maybe you'll comment on that comment, and then I won't do the third round.
No, that's fine.
It's very reminiscent of random walk models. So in those, it's slightly different. You might have some initial clusters, and now you add a new data point. And you want to assign probabilities that this data point belongs to the various clusters. And what one does simply is one runs a random walk on the data set, and one sees which clusters it lands in with which probabilities. So you get a vector.
Right, the steady state probability.
And then
yeah.
you get exactly a tree like this, because you have features at various levels.
I didn't think of it that way. I know of the random walks with research in particular, and some of the work that came out of Christos Faloutsos out of CMU, in which you use the random walk with research to find nodes that are quote unquote close to you or similar to you, right? If a node has high steady state probability of you landing there, given that I started from here, then it is that I'm close to it. But I haven't thought of it that way.
You get those similar type of structures.
Really? I'll talk to you later to get some. So in which on the very top you have all these basically common, general features in the network, and then at the very bottom you have the Cool. I would be very happy to look at that. And basically, so what it says here is that there is, so in this group there are 9 books that fell in here, and 100% of them belong to the liberals. This is basically what it says. And basically what we would like to see is that on the very top again, you want to have these groups that are heterogeneous in their mixture, right? Here you have 50% conservatives, 23% liberals, and 27% neutrals. And as you go down, you want it to become more homogeneous, in which you have this, which is all Democrats or liberals and all conservatives, slip of the tongue. So, And then the next one that we tried, so that one, we're like, good, cool, it looks okay, right? Looks okay. But, we don't have any kind of qualitative way of validating it. Here's the other example that we tried, which is the MIT reality mining again. This is 98 people nodes and 1,766 links. And here is the distribution of the titles. This is what we're using as, quote unquote, the class label, right, to see how the groups look that we find. And this is the structure that we get. And it doesn't look as good as the one that I showed before, right? Like in this one, you start from the top, and then on the very bottom, you have this heterogeneous group. But then over here, you had a homogeneous group. But here, at this level, you have a very homogeneous group. But then when you go down to the bottom level, it becomes all of a sudden heterogeneous again, which is not what we wanted. Of course, right. So one thing would be that maybe that these titles are not the right thing to look at, right? Maybe look at these really should belong to the same group. And we just don't know what is the set of features that are making them belong to the same group, right? But that's what we're going with. And this is why like methods can like predict the links that you took out are nice, because you don't have to do this construction of features to say what the truth is. You had a question? The other one that we tried is the infamous Enron data set. We took a small set of it. Again, these models are very, very slow, right? So if you have a really big data set, you don't want to use it. Or also the other caveat is that we didn't do anything fancy with the inference, right? There are fancy, like approximate variational inference, blah, 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 but we didn't use that. So we picked this small sample from Enron. We had some titles again from them, so we grouped them. So here's the upper management, middle management, blah, 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 and this is the percentage of them in the network that we used, and this is the total number of nodes. And this is the hierarchy we get. Again, it's the same kind of a thing. You know, we really want it to be such that the groups on the top are heterogeneous, and as you move down, for them to become homogeneous. This structure doesn't show that. It could be, again, that these aren't really what we should use as, quote unquote, the class labels to compare it, but we don't know, right? Now, the one problem here is that there's a lot of degrees of freedom, right? If I say, like, a level 3 tree, right, there are many, 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 many trees, right? So it's not just about predict this link, but what's the right tree structure, right? So that's the first one. Then given that tree structure, given the levels, right, you've already constrained it by levels, what's the right group structure to find within that. So I showed you two extensions of IRM. We just changed the priors. The last one we think is very interesting. We don't have a really clear-cut validation technique, and I'm happy to talk to anybody who can come up with a nice fat validation technique for it. And there are other approaches, as I was saying here this past week. There are the compression-based and MDL-based approaches like Falutsos's, and then there's the graph theoretic-based, like the talk we heard yesterday, late in the day. And these are very fast compared to the probabilistic approaches, but they're not as expressive, right? You don't get that nice probability distribution that you would want. And so just a little bit about the compression-based approaches. A lot of work has come out of CMU, in particular Christos's group, in which what you really want to do is you have a coding cost, and then you have a description cost, and you want to minimize that. And you do that by rotating the rows and the columns and splitting it, and then you get these nice block models. The other one is, of course, Mark Newman's work, especially on modularity, which is a measure of the density of within a group and outside a group. Of course, we all know that what is a group is an ill-defined problem because it goes on similarity. Lots and lots of papers here. The thing, again, is that there's no validation across each one, right? As a user, which one should I use? Should I just, because I have a big graph, should I just go for a compression-based approach? And you know, also with compression-based approaches, as I was saying yesterday, for example, Christos's group has this thing in which they also get the row clusters and the column clusters, right? So should I go with the CMU approach or should I go with the University of Texas approach, right? So, and the probabilistic approaches tend to be not nice here because you could take some held out test set and then use your model to be able to predict it. And we are doing some work with Christos here to be able to at least validate IRM against cross association that came out of their group. So some of the work, so we did this preliminary work. Our sponsors were happy with it. We got some more funding for it, and we're working with Mike Jordan and Tom Griffiths at Berkeley to be able to extend the approach. In particular, we didn't really look at efficient inference procedures, and so we would like their help to be able to come up with nice, probabilistic approaches that could be fast with respect to inference. In particular, maybe we can exploit the information that we have from the graph, like the graph theoretic approaches. And then the other one is that it seems like what people really, really want is the posterior probability that Mark and I will belong to the same group sometime in the future, right? Given what you know of our communication now and previously. And so this is something that we're also going to start looking at. So that was the first part of the talk. I have a second part of the talk. This is a talk I gave a couple of weeks ago here, and I won't go into details. So this is with Brian Gallagher at Livermore. And basically the problem is that you have a network, and on the network, the nodes have attributes or some kind of class label. And a lot of the nodes in the network have the missing value for that label or attribute. And so you want to be able to predict them, or for example, the attribute could be on the link. This is a supervised approach as opposed to the other one. And this occurs in a lot of different applications. For example, on the web with respect to fraud, you know, you have this entire huge worldwide web, and some of the nodes are, you know, that are fraudulent, some of the web pages, and some of them are legitimate, and you want to be able to see what the other ones are. This is the MIT data again. It's a picture of it. For the black nodes, you know who they are. They're the students. And all the yellow nodes, you don't know their title, and you want to find their title. And so only 8% of the total nodes are labeled. And this is a phone call. And so basically what we wanted to answer was, how much does the network structure that you know makes up for the lack of the attribute information? Does structure provide anything above and beyond the class labels that you know? What is the benefit of looking at the structural features versus collective classification, which is a popular technique nowadays, which looks at the dependency between the class labels of neighbors? Is there a benefit at all to combining the two? And also, if there is a benefit to structural features, what structural features should you use and what combination of them should you use? So if you want, we have answers for them. If you want, come talk to me afterwards and I will give you the answers. So that's it. And I'll let you go early for lunch.